In the first chapter, Pasuk Chaf, the 20th Pasuk of Mishnah, Shlomo is going to describe how wisdom is out there. God made wisdom available, and people tend to deride it and forego it and pass up on the opportunities to lose wisdom until it's too late, until suddenly they realize they need it in their lives. And by then, it's too late. People have ample opportunity to learn. And when they have that opportunity, they squander it, it's very interesting. It's one of the depressing common comments I hear from guys after they leave Mahon Meir. I wish I would have taken better advantage of my time when I was there. So I always say, don't say that, because you can't, in hindsight, you could have done better. I'm not sure you could have done better. You need time to breathe. You can't just work. Do they say that before they leave? They also say it before they leave. So now in Pasuk Chaf, Shlomo Melech describes, Chochmot b'chutz tarona, b'rchovot titen kola. Wisdom calls out in the marketplaces, out in the streets, so to speak. Again, this is a mashal, this is a metaphor. B'rosh homiyot tikra. She goes to public places where the masses are gathered, and she calls out, בפתחי שערים בעיר אמרי התומר. She goes to the gates, she goes to the city, wherever people are located, she's calling out, and it's as though she's saying, the Torah's out there. Wherever you go, you bump into this concept, gee, maybe I should know more Torah to know how to deal with this aspect of life or that aspect of life. Often in life, we encounter situations where we know, if only I knew more Torah, I'd have better tools to deal with it. And he's describing it as though wherever you go, wisdom is calling you. Wherever the crowds are, that's where you have the advertisement. Come. It's something like the Thursday night classes where you have all these loads of signs. Come, come, come. But the truth is that is the way life works. That we do have ample opportunities where if we think about it, it's staring us in the face. Hey, I should really do this for myself. And what wisdom is saying is, Ad matai, till when? Petayim tehavu feti. Till when will you people enjoy being seduced? Meaning, life is like that. You sit there, and you're sitting on the internet, and it's 12 o'clock, it's 1 o'clock, it's 2 o'clock, and then you kick yourself. And say, I shouldn't have been sitting here these 2 hours. But you knew all along during those 2 hours you shouldn't have been sitting there, and you enjoyed it, right? So it's peti is a person who goes after what he'd like to believe, what he wants. So wisdom says, till when will you enjoy being seduced? It's like you kick yourself, but you don't really kick yourself. You kick yourself because you're sorry for the outcome, but at the same time, you liked it when it was happening. And that's the way of much of what we do wrong in life. At that moment, it's delicious, it's good. You don't want to do anything else. So the claim that wisdom, that the Torah, so to speak, has on us is, till when will you be in that state that you enjoy being seduced? V'leitzim latzon chamdu lahim uchsilim yisne'u da'at. And until when will the jokers desire joking and the fools hate wisdom? Every person likes the state he's in. It's like the woman who once said to a rabbi, I'd be observant if anyone would just sit down and answer my questions, I'd observe the Torah. So the rabbi said, lady, let's sit down. So she said, I'd really like to hear the answers, but right now I don't have time. We all like the state we're in, usually. It's very comfortable and very difficult to think about making change. It's one of the things I tell people when they ask me about you guys for shiduchim. I say, when was the last time you ever changed something in your life? Any guy that walks into Mahon Meir stopped their life and decided they're making change. That's already unusual. That's already 1% of the population or 0.001% of the population. When did anyone else ever do that in their lives? Most people, they stick to what's comfortable. If a person likes joking, so he knows there's a price to pay for joking, for sarcasm, but he likes it. And if a person is leading a life where he is not too educated, he doesn't want that education right now, because that might obligate him to change. So the first claim that wisdom has to people is, till when will you be in the state that those that are constantly seduced, or that's the majority of us seduced by sin, they like that state. The jokers or the sarcastic ones, they like it. and the fools, they like not know, they hate knowledge. So wisdom calls out to them, the Torah calls out to them, and says, Tashuvu litochachti, come back to hear my teaching, my rebuke. Hine yabia lachem ruchihi, hodia devarai, etchem. I'll teach you. Torah is there, and it's available. And today we see this more than ever. If once upon a time you had to travel to learn Torah, today just turn on the internet. You have everything. You could have it on your MP3 player, on your iPod, on your anything you want. There's no excuse. It's all out there. Once upon a time it was harder. What?
Between 2 and 4. Yeah. I can resist that one.
That's for you guys who have it all day. You have it live all day. Ask Mr. Towers. He was watching us online, wondering, how could they get pizza? They learn Torah and they get pizza. Right? You guys are in the Garden of Eden here. They're mad. Question is, where's the snake, right? Yankarati vatima'enu. And then there's a point where it's too late. And wisdom says, the Torah, so to speak, says, you know, I've been calling and you refuse to listen. Natiti adi ve'ein makshiv. I've extended my hand, you aren't listening. Vatifu cholatzatihi. And you undid any plan I had. You guys weren't willing to listen to what I had to say. Vetochachtihi lo avitim. And you weren't willing to hear my rebuke. Gamani. And then it reaches the point where wisdom says, so when you're broken, when things go bad, so to speak, I laugh. I say, you know what, I kept trying to get you to avoid this. This is also an unfortunate scene that you guys will probably witness throughout your lives. Many of you probably have relatives who are not taking the path that you're taking. And you could see the prices they're paying in life. And as much as you might try telling them, hey, there's something else out there, until a person pays the price, and then they say, you know, maybe tell me what this Torah is all about. But by then it's a little late. By then they're already paying the price for the fact that they never learned. A person that doesn't have self-discipline will pay the price. A person that errs on all the points we will learn throughout Mishle, at the end of the day he pays the price, and the wisdom is there staring at us and offering us, come learn. But there is a time when we've moved forward in life, and it's, you could learn and rectify for the future, but you can't undo the past. You can't undo the life that a person has lived without learning. I remember we had a student here. I don't remember who it was. He might still be one of you guys. but this goes back a few years. I don't think so. it's not you. So... His father sent him an email, and his father wrote, he said, you know, you invited me to watch the Machon Meir classes online, and I called your mother in, and I sat there, and I watched the Torah you're learning that I never had an opportunity to learn. And son, I sat there with my wife, I sat there with your mother, and I just started crying. And I said to her, you know, I have to start learning now, because he's getting an opportunity, I never had an opportunity. I never had that. I remember who it was. His father came from Russia. You know, and over there they didn't have these opportunities. They couldn't learn. And he said, I wish you well, you should continue, you should learn, and now I'm going to join you online. And they forwarded us this letter. So the father was realizing, you know, I've lived my whole life without this. You're lucky you're getting it at a young age, and you're going to be able to live your whole life with this. The father was saying, I'm going to learn now. It's never too late to start, but I can't undo everything I didn't do until now. So that's the point, that wisdom that the Torah is talking about, where at some point the Torah says, you know, if you haven't been willing to listen to me all along, so there comes a point where I laugh when things go wrong. I can't help you. Ve'idchem kisufa yetem bevo alechem tzara v'tzuka. When the time comes, like the darkness of the evening settles in, like a whirlwind comes in, and suddenly things go awry in your life, when suddenly things go bad in your life, az yikra'unini ve'lo e'ne, then they call me. When things go bad, then people say, wait a second, maybe I should change something in my life. And at that time, Torah, so to speak, says, I can't fix your past. I won't enter at that point. They'll seek me out, but you know, in 1 minute you suddenly want to do all this massive change, it's not going to work. They'll seek me out, but they won't find it because it doesn't work that way. You can't suddenly switch everything. And the truth is that if we read into the lines here, what's the Torah saying here? The Torah is saying, when the time comes, then everything they've feared will suddenly come upon them. And I think there's an allusion here to the fact that a person who leads a certain lifestyle, deep down inside, he also knows, this isn't what I'm supposed to be doing. And this is a recurring theme we find in many different places, that people like to behave as though they're happy the way their life is, and they have no interest in being Torah observant, and life is fine and dandy without it. And we see, throughout Tanakh, we see this theme, that deep down inside, King David says it, and his son Shlomo says it, people have this feeling, hey, this isn't right. I really should be doing something different. And they keep covering it up. They keep placating themselves. And that's what the Torah over here is saying, when the things you feared all along will suddenly develop. You'll see them coming true before your eyes. Then you'll say, okay, I give in. Okay, let me go back. And we find this theme. We find the wicked king of Judea, Menashe. His whole life he was a pagan. He'd take every Torah scroll he could find and erase God's name from it. He'd write, Bereshis bara, in the beginning, Zeus created the heaven and the earth. And he'd have the kids educated and he'd stick in names of different idols into the Sefer Torah. Throughout Israel, you couldn't find a properly edited Torah except for those they'd hide from him. So he, at some point, he was captured by the enemies. They put him in this big vat. And then they started burning him alive. They turned on a fire underneath and they're cooking him alive.
He was Jewish,
yeah. The son of the pious king, Chizkiyoh. So, Menashe is being cooked alive. It's getting hot in there. So he's a master of every idol, and he starts calling the different idols he served throughout his life. He's calling this one and that one, help me, save me, and nothing doing. And it reaches a point where it's now or never, and he says, God, yeah, I know my father always told me you're up there. If you're really up there, then help me now. And if not, you're no different than all the others. But you see, how did he word his question? If not, you're no different than all the others. Meaning deep down inside, he knew God is different than all the others. All the years that he was worshipping all the idols, and even now as he was being cooked alive and he first tried all the other idols, at the end, he says, okay, now my last straw, so to speak. God, now I turn back to you. And if you won't help me, then I guess you're no different than all the others, meaning deep down inside all along he knew God was different. But we're all that way. Deep down inside we have a lot of things that we know, but we're not willing to admit. And that's, I think, a little bit of what the Torah or the wisdom over here is saying. That bevop kishua pachtechem, when the things you fear settle in on you like the night, when your destruction suddenly comes in like a whirlwind, then when you call me, I won't answer. Then it's going to be too late to undo what you've done in the past.
So he didn't help him, I guess, right?
Huh?
I guess he didn't help him, right?
So Menashe's prayers went up to heaven. And Menashe had murdered so many Jews that the streets of Jerusalem had rivers of blood from his murders.
He's insincere, he didn't get help, right?
And the angels stood there and they said, no, we're not letting this prayer in. No way. And God, we have on tradition that God drilled a hole in his heavenly throne and stuck his hand down beneath, grabbed his prayer and said, I accept. He made a miracle and saved Menashe, and Menashe did tshuva and went back and became king. And in the world to come, I have news for you, there are special rooms in heaven. We have a whole medrash that describes the rooms in the garden, in heaven, in Olam Haba. And it says, you know, there's the room for the regular Jews, then there's a special room for Gerim, then there's a special room for Chozrim B'tshuva. I'm not going in correct order. There's like a list of 10 rooms. And there are special rooms, you know, just like, what do they call those seats? Something box seat.
What's it called?
Box seats, as it's called. You get like front row seats, right? So Gerim get front row seats, and Chozrim B'tshuva get front row seats. There are all kinds of front row seats up there in Shemayim. But, you know, you just stick in the car. This is what I did in life, and you're in. A guy who was born Jewish, grew up Jewish, he's got to fight his way all the way to the front. You know, but a Baal Tshuva has a special room, and that special box seat for a Baal Tshuva, you know who's the Rosh Yeshiva and the Yeshiva there? It says in the Medrash, it's Menashe. We won't tell him we said that, right? So, he's up there. He's going to be Rosh Yeshiva. I mean, I hope one day I'll merit to be a Baal Tshuva too, and then maybe I'll get there too. So, the Pasuk says in Pasuk Chavtes, why is it that none of this is going to work? Tachat kisane udat ve'irat Adonai lo vacharu. This is all instead because they loathed knowledge, because they loathed knowledge and they did not choose the fear of God. Those of you who didn't get pizza, we'll bring in more in a few minutes. Lo avu la'atzati na'atzu kol tochachti. They were not interested in my advice. They were not interested in my way of life. And they were disgusted. They scorned all of my rebuke. A person can't live his whole life scorning a certain way of life. And then in the end, he says, okay, now let's see. How do we make this work? The Talmud discusses, on the one hand, we always have opportunity to do tshuva. A person wants to do tshuva, it's always available. But if a person lives his life and he figures, you know, let me enjoy life. I'll be in my 70s and my 80s when I no longer have the strength to live it all up. Then I'll go and grow a long white beard. I'll go to some Machon Meir. I'll enlist and I'll say, I want to be Orthodox. I want to be from. Tell me what I'm supposed to do. How do I do tshuva? How do I get into the world to come? It says that's not going to work. You can't do it that way. God doesn't say a person can sin and say, I'll get to repentance when I want to. There comes a point where if a person's been living his life figuring, I'm just going to do this until I'm old and I'll change at some point. God says, you know, you weren't interested. It's not going to work. Or it's going to be much harder to make it work. There comes a point where a person reaps the fruit of the way he lived his life. There was a family, there are many families like this, that after the Holocaust, different siblings had to choose what's going to be important to them in life. And some siblings said, what's important to me is to become wealthy. We had a student here in Machon Meir that when he was already a grown man, his mother called him into the room and said, son, I just want to tell you something. You're Jewish. So he looks at her and he says, say what? She says, look, your grandmother came after Jews were persecuted in Europe. And she said, I'm not going to do that to my kids. And she went and married a non-Jew. And when I was born, she said to me, listen here, my daughter. In Judaism, it goes by the daughter, by the mother. You're technically Jewish. But if you listen to me, don't go marry Jewish. We suffered enough. Go marry a non-Jew. So I listened to my mother. I married someone who's not Jewish. Your father's not Jewish. But son, by Jewish law, you should just know, by the way, you're a Jew. So the guy was destroyed. He was devastated. He had never known this. His whole life he was searching for meaning, and here finds out he's actually Jewish. And years later he came to us. I mean, it took over a decade, close to two decades, before he ended up in Machon Meir. But he was searching, you know, for two decades he was searching. He was trying to figure out what to make of life. And there were many people who after the Holocaust had to make a choice. What's going to be important to them in life? And some people made the choice, like those women did, where they said, survival is what's important to me. I don't care about anything else. Survival, wealth, integrating. And those people made a choice. And very often, later on, they looked back and they regretted that choice. And there comes a point where a person has to say, wait a second, but I'm already married. I already have a family. I've already acted upon the choice. And that's what the Pasuk is saying in Pasuk Lamed Aleph, V'yochelu mipri darkam. A person is at a point where he reaps the fruit of the path he's chosen. We can't always just reverse and pull out. In life, you know, you guys are young. You have before you choices what type of lives you'll build. You have to remember that there is a point where there's no reverse. What you've built is there. You could guide the car where you're going to go forward from here. But you can't go reverse. You're not going to be able to undo what's done. And that's what the wisdom is warning us in this first chapter of Mishlei. He's saying, look, I'm going to tell you a good way of life. I'm going to encourage you to a good way of life. I'm going to tell you about Torah and how to understand Torah and the depths of Torah. As we discussed, Mishlei is about advice and also giving us tools as to how to learn the Torah. But you have to know that there are plenty of people out there who make choices and choose paths and then later regret them. And I can't help them at that point. There comes a point where ve'yochlu mipri darkam. People eat the fruits of the paths they've chosen. And the Navi says, and the time will come where umimo'atzoteihem. And the question is how you translate the word mo'atzoteihem. So the simple understanding is from their thoughts, like Eitzah, from the thoughts they had, that's what they'll be satiated from. And the people after the Holocaust that chose to focus on wealth and security and integrating and everything else, very often they were successful. That's why we our grandparents are a generation that many of them were very wealthy, because that was their focus after the Holocaust. But at the same time, many of them had children who were completely irreligious. And many of them, their children intermarried. And many of them, they look at the next generation, the following generation, they reap the fruits of what they have. They have successful businessmen. They have lawyers and doctors. But where's the Judaism in the family? And then you have people who walked away from the Holocaust and said, we have to ensure the continuation of the Jewish people by focusing on Torah, on educating our kids, on building good communities after this. And those people also reap the fruits of what they've done. The Navi continues and warns. He says, "Ki meshuvat petayim tahagim, v'shalvat kesilim te'abedim." Because very often, the foolish choice is the easier choice. To take off from your life and come learn for a year is hard. It's not easy. You have to factor, you know, the time is money. You're paying a price for this time. You can't ignore that time is passing. Your friends are getting another degree. Your friends are doing, so to speak, advancing in life. And you, what are you doing? You're also advancing in life. And the difference is that they have chosen Meshuvat, to go a path which is relatively calmer. You know, to make a change in your life isn't easy. Where is it all going to land? But the Navi here warns, the calmness of the foolish ultimately kills them. Sometimes the best thing you could have is a rude awakening. If only the banks would have had a rude awakening 5 years ago, we'd be in a different place today. So sometimes the worst thing a person can have is tranquility, calmness. Ki meshuvat pitayim talgeim, because the calmness of the foolish often kills them. And this can also be applied to job options sometimes. I had a friend who, he was offered a job where part of the job was, he was a young man, they wanted him very badly. They said, we'll give you a free apartment, we'll give you a free car, you'll have a company apartment and a company car, plus a salary. So he was very excited. And then he called a mutual friend of ours who's big in finance, and that friend said, don't take the job. So he said, what do you mean don't take the job? They're giving me a free apartment, a free car, plus a salary. So he said to them, look, will you ever own your own house? So long as you have the job, you're in their apartment. The day you lose the job, you don't have a house. If you take a different job, it might be harder, but you'll feel like you have to buy yourself a house. You'll have a house at the end of the day. Here, all you'll have is the job, and they have your house, and they have your car. It's interesting that this guy really didn't take the job, but two other mutual friends of ours did. And I bumped into them today. Both of them were fired today. This place, and both of them know that 3 months from now they don't have a roof over their heads. The third guy, he took a different job. He didn't get it. He's still renting. He doesn't own his own house. But he's not in a position where now he's searching for a job, plus he's out of house and a car. Meaning the two other ones, they said, great, we have a free house. Sometimes the calmness that we're offered, sometimes the fact that it's tranquil isn't always for in our best interest. Theoretically, if they'd be saving up money to buy a house the way he was, they'd be well off. But the fact of the matter is that sometimes the calm path in the short term is something that kills us in the long term. The Navi warns us that the calmness of the fools ultimately kills them. If a guy is eating in a way that he shouldn't eat, and then he has a heart attack, and he makes it out of the heart attack, that might be the biggest blessing in the world. Now he'll change his diet, and he could live till 120. On the other hand, the guy might have a long life, he's living till 60, and everything's fine, and suddenly massive heart attack, he's dead. He wishes he would have had a minor heart attack at age 40. He would have changed his life, maybe. Sometimes the fact that things are tranquil kills a person. The shalvat kesilim, and the peace of the fools, they think everything's great to have them. That's what causes them to be lost. If Olmert would have been audited 10 years ago, he wouldn't be where he is now, right? He would have been cursing, what am I getting audited for, right? But he would have behaved differently. Sometimes the smaller problem is really saving us from a bigger problem. And the fact that things go peacefully till there's a big explosion, it's a big price to pay. And so the wisdom concludes her speech and says, "B'shomea li yishkon behetach v'shanan mipachad ra'a." And if someone listens to me, then in this world they'll have a peaceful life, and they'll also be peaceful from fear of bad, because they'll be peaceful for the world to come as well. A person will have true tranquility. We have to know that true tranquility is not what we always think it is. People think, well, what's true tranquility? You own your car, you own your house, you have a steady income, your kids are in school. I guess that can be, in a certain way, that can be tranquility. But tranquility revolves around where you are in life. Where's your soul? If you're at peace with yourself, you can contend with the hardships of life. There was a couple that was dating, and she was very big into going to Arab territories and going anywhere you could that's part of the land of Israel. And he said, halachically, I can't see that that's right. You're endangering your life. Well, who are you serving? What are you doing? So at some point we sat together, and I said to her, I said, you know, if a person does what they believe is right, halachically, so if later there's a price to pay, they're willing to pay the price. Because they say, I've done what's right, I've lived my life as best as I could, and now, if there's a price to pay, what can I do? I did the best I could. But when a person does something that's risky, or does something that that has a big price to pay, and they don't feel that's a correct way in life, so then when the price comes up, they kick themselves twice. They kick themselves for the price they're paying, and they kick themselves that they got into that situation. Because really, they're not content, they're not at peace with themselves that they got there. When a person knows, I did my best, I did what was right, there's a certain peace that comes with it. And in life, we make enough bad decisions that we kick ourselves for the decision and the outcome. If we choose a path which we're not whole with, that's a problem. I told them, I don't believe they can get engaged unless they work out this difference. Either he finds a rabbi that agrees with her, you know, which isn't a logical way of working in life. You know, he has his rabbi, he has his way of working. So she has to decide if she's going to go the line with that or not. But to live a life where she's taking certain risks that can have a huge price, and he doesn't even feel that that's a mitzvah, that's a problem. And we'll conclude this with one of the most powerful stories I ever heard. I just have to think which details to leave out so I can put two and two and two together. No, you guys don't know the person, but maybe one day you will, because it's a famous person. So we won't go into details who this person is, but there was a person who was once interviewed about his life in the Holocaust. And he was a person who was unusually successful at what he did. And everyone thought that he had left the Holocaust to a great extent behind him. And in this interview, they asked him, does the Holocaust still impact your life? You know, decades have passed since the Holocaust. And he said, yes. You won't understand it, but a few times a week I get up in the middle of the night with nightmares from the Holocaust, in spite of my life. And the interviewer heard that, and he was very shocked. And years later, he met a relative of that person. And the relative told him, you know, I just heard a stunning revelation from this celebrity about what's been plaguing him all these years. You know, we grew up together. And I remember him getting up night after night, yelling out of nightmares. And I never thought, what's he dreaming? And because he's become an old man, he said, you know, for once I have to share with you what's been plaguing me all these years. So the story goes back to the concentration camps. They're in the camps, and he has a good friend. And he and his friend are pretty sharp. They're with it. And they see that there are ways in which they could make it out of the camp. And their concern is that they know that the Nazis have a way of punishing if someone tries to make it out. Whether they will live or die, they don't care. They have to try. But their concern is, you know, maybe if we make it out, they'll kill two other people inside. Maybe they'll kill the whole camp. Who knows what they'll do just to teach a lesson people shouldn't make it out. Maybe they'll know we got out, maybe not. So they make their way to the rabbi in the camp. And they ask the rabbi, what are we supposed to do? We think we can make it out, but we're not sure what the repercussions might be on the other people in the camp. So the rabbi sat and looked into it, and finally came back to them and he said, look, we don't know if anyone's going to make it out of here alive. And we don't know if they'll ever notice that you guys made it out of the camp. You guys might make it out and they won't notice. And we don't know if you'll make it out alive. And they might kill you and then they won't see a need to punish anyone else. And even if you make it out alive, they might not know it. And even if they do know it, sometimes they know it and they say, so what? Okay, two people made it out. Usually people don't make it out. There is a far out chance that they'll punish other people. There is that chance, but being that there are so many questions here, you have to do what you can do to keep yourselves alive. And the halacha is, you have to, if you two can figure out a way to get out, get out. They get this psak and they're making plans, and then they're transferred camps. So all their plans go down the tubes. They're in a new camp. They're in this new camp, and they're working. And they're working out in the forest, but there are SS men all around them. And they're working out in the forest, and suddenly one day they're in the middle of working, and out of nowhere there's a huge downpour, and they're all caught by surprise. And everyone, including the SS men, run for cover. They're working, and suddenly they look around, they see themselves alone right near the forest. They look at one another, and they both think the same things, here's our chance, and they run. And they run into the woods, and not a shot is fired, nothing, they've made it out. And they escape. Them two escape. The SS men were so caught by surprise by the sudden downpour that they ran to cover together with the Jews, who also ran for cover. The only two who did not run for cover were them two. So everyone else had run in one direction, and the SS men figured everyone were with them. When in fact, them two stood outside alone. And they made it away. And he said that a few times a week, as he's sleeping, he sees 10 people that he was with in the camp. And they come back to him, and they tell him, because you ran away, we were killed. And they look at him with blaming eyes. They have a claim against him. Because you ran away, we were killed. And there are pictures of people he lived with, people he remembers. And he says every time, the dream ends with the same line. That he yells and he says, but I asked the shaila. I asked and I was told that this is the halachically correct thing to do. And he wakes up in tears after making that declaration. I asked what I'm supposed to do, and I was told that this is the correct halacha. I heard the story firsthand. I heard the story from the one who heard the story from him. And this story, I think the power in the story is that he can awaken from the dream because he has an answer. Because he can say, you know, I asked and I did what was right. And I think that that's part of the understanding of this pasuk. When Shlomo HaMelech says, "V'shomea li yishkon betach," whoever listens to me will live with peace, with tranquility. He's not giving us a guarantee that life will be peaceful. He can't guarantee, you know, whether a person's going to succeed or not, lose his house or not, what's going to befall a person. What he's guaranteeing a person is what state his soul is going to be in. When a person contends with life and he says, but I've ran the course that God gave me, I've lived in accordance with the values and the moral system that God gave me, so then he has an answer. He told his family members, he said, the only reason I can get up from that dream is because I have an answer for them. That's the only way I get up in the morning. Because I end the dream and I say, you know, I asked and I was told that this is the right thing to do.